This is tape recording number 5110C26B, Foundation Auditor's Course, Lecture Number 8. A tape-recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 26th of October, 1951. The title of this lecture is The Evolution of Man, According to the Facsimile. It is 43 minutes and 28 seconds long. Copyright C, 1951-1974 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
I have a little datum for you. I just happened to think of this. Has been a puzzle to me for many years. Down in Panama and other parts of the world, they have a large number of, there's a special name in entomology for it, insects that have taken on a complete pattern of ferocity or something of the sort, so that you'll have a butterfly with a ferocious, smiling face painted on his wings. You'll have some bug that looks just exactly like a poisonous bug, only he isn't poisonous. And it's a camouflage of sorts. And suddenly it occurred to me, I often wondered, how on earth does it design it? It plagued me, because the patterns are excellent. And the amount of duplicity involved in it is tremendous. You can find them in entomology books. And worth your while to take a look. It's unbelievable that life would make a butterfly and then reproduce an animal's face, teeth and all, on its back. You just don't imagine. You see it there. It's there. Well, how simple can we get? This is merely a counter effort. It does it by counter effort. What's been killing it? Somehow or other, it's gotten fixed up on a basis of counter efforts, and it just takes the counter effort and builds a new one, just like the counter effort. It doesn't put the sting in, or the poison, or something like that, leaves that out because it doesn't have that. And all of a sudden, you've got your fake. Wonder how many human beings operate that way. Guy's been killed by large, tall men with fierce black mustaches. So in the next lifetime, why, he starts to wear, he grows tall and wears a black mustache. I wonder. No, this is, we're out into the blue as far as the amount of stuff we can recover. And actually, however, we have a very finite package at this time. We've got data. We have answers to an enormous number of hitherto unknowns or guessed ats. Guess-thats are more dangerous than unknowns, because people on guess-thats will defend to the death their guesses. Whereas you seldom get into a fight with somebody because he says he doesn't know. Well now, overall picture of the subject of this time definitely tells us that we have axioms which don't necessarily embrace all the phenomena. Obviously, the axioms embrace the phenomena, but the phenomena does not have to be listed with the axioms. The axioms are just as valid without the complete listing of phenomena. We have taken a departure point in this subject. I imagine that there is an actual reason for a secret society beginning to use some of its rights secretly. Because the public won't believe it. And they get their hands on certain phenomena which the public doesn't believe, and they don't just willfully say, now we'll use this phenomena with which to control a large segment of the populace. They don't say this. They just get driven into doing it. And the object, however, is not control. The object is simply to know and to use what one has. There is nothing unpermissible whatsoever about telling somebody about this material. But the problem of making them believe it is yours. You've been into this thing up to your elbows. You know what this stuff's about. You know what can happen. You're trying to tell somebody who doesn't even know there's a time track. And once upon a time, he was an algae. And then he could remember it. And he says, gawk. So you see why. Now, the funny part of it is that the basic axioms and standard phenomena can be offered, backed up, be completely believed. Somebody will walk in on it at his peril. Because he starts walking in on it very far and becomes very practiced, and he's going to run into the rest of the phenomena. It's inevitable that he will. However, the superficiality of study of subjects may also make it so that in the immediate confines of the subject, those who have been trained in the subject know how bad it can get or how good it can get. And others, merely studying from the text, merely studying text, calm, and so on, find the material very useful, very usable. And they go on using it at that depth and with no greater depth. What I'm trying to tell you now is that you have a subject which explains itself without your introduction of any incredibilities to anybody's mind. You can tell somebody about this. You can say, well, you can get very simple. You can say, well, pain is like an energy, and once a person is hurt, there's a sort of a storage, a record of this energy of pain, and then later on, why, this storage file is brought into present time, and the person hurts. The fellow looks at you, and he says, gee, that's a tremendous thought. Something new. You say, and furthermore, we can work it out. You can take this old file of pain, and you can work it out in such a way that it doesn't bother you anymore. Very acceptable. No strain at all. Particularly, you start running a somatic, and he starts to hurt when you tell him to, and he may consider this rather odd and peculiar, but after a while, he doesn't hurt so much, and certainly his sinus trouble's been cured, and he isn't worried about what you hit out and knocked out. He serves facsimile and its attendant locks and some of his conclusions, and he just feels fine. What I'm asking you to do is to forbear on educating and concentrate simply on doing things for people. Because you can wave the magic wand for this subject. You can do things for people. And not until now were we completely beyond depth. Because in order to communicate the subject, you put yourself somewhat on the order of a geometry teacher taking a five-year-old kid and teaching him geometry. You have to estimate how much the five-year-old kid can understand. Geometry? Well, geometry is very interesting. You know, there's such things as angles. What's an angle? Well, that's an angle. Now, it can be a narrow angle, it can be a wide angle. The kid says, gee, that's right. Never thought of that before. Tremendous. And then they say there's circles, or big circles and little circles. You look all around the world around you, and you find circles. Big circles, little circles, angles. The kid's tremendously edified. He'll immediately go out and tell the other kids that he knows geometry now. He will, too. He'll go out and tell them he won't know geometry. But people come around to you to work out a problem. You have the mathematics with which to work their problem. You have the data necessary to resolve their problem. You're a scientist to that degree. You have the data. Now you want to decide whether or not you're going to act with your information or teach your information. And even if you decide you're going to teach your information to someone, how much? Well, never, never try to teach somebody more than he can absorb. Because you're just leaving confused. You tell somebody, well, a person's lifetime is very full of pain. They've been hurt lots of times. So you can get rid of all this pain, or get rid of the reason to have any of this pain, why, a person would feel a lot better, wouldn't he? I think, perfectly agreeable.
And you say, well, now, so happens that there's a way this pain is stored, and so on, we can knock it out. Now, you just remember this, and you can remember that, and so on. That is in about all the explanation you actually need in order to execute processing on somebody. All you need to tell them. Don't tell them anything more. You're wasting your time, because they're not going to understand you unless they go to the beginning of the subject, start in where you did, and study all the distance that you've studied. And that's quite a distance. They haven't spent the time sitting around the couch trying to make the pre-clear well, realizing that your techniques are not quite adequate, knowing that there's things which you don't know, wondering whether or not you're doing it all right, looking straight down the barrel of phenomena and trying to make it operate according to your dictates, being triumphant at your small successes and being way down in the depths at your failures, so on. This is a different kind of attitude than anybody else will really have here. But just the same, if you're going to teach this subject, the thing to do is just to start in. Somebody says he wants to know all about this subject. Well, there are two ways to go about it. You can go about the whole proposition, as in a class, of actually teaching them the subject by axioms, demonstrating each time that you demonstrate an axiom that there is phenomena to back up this axiom. Demonstrate it very quietly and go on. Or you can teach them in such a way as to simply snow them under. And that has its uses. You can start in with an individual. If you were to take a book of axioms and hand them a book of axioms, you say, now I'll take axiom one. Of course, you were acquainted with physics. He plunked them in school. You already stowed him under a little bit. And in the general practice of mathematics, geometry, so forth, we find it's necessary to set up an orderly array of data which coordinates. Now, this has been accomplished in this fashion. Don't let them get off onto anything simple enough to argue with. That's right. And throw them double talk. Doesn't matter. But don't be bothered to throw yourself into question and your knowledge, which is very, very good and very wide, into question by trying to talk to somebody who knows nothing about it and trying to unload the whole package on him simultaneously. You can't do it. And you will wind up by being invalidated or something. So fix yourself up a little package by which you relay what it is. In order to do processing, and somebody asks you, what is this? Why, you simply tell them according to their ability to know the subject. Or you conduct a full class and teach them from beginning to end. Those are your choices. It's much easier to say, it can do, than it is to say, well, its intentions in the future are too. You say, it can do, and the fellow says, yeah. Now, you actually can pull this trick at this time. I told an attorney one time, tried to tell an attorney what this subject was all about. And he didn't click along any part of the discussion until I suddenly said to him, well, what if you had a sentence that you could issue to an individual and snap your fingers and he'd roll up in a ball on the floor? Well, he says, that would have some use. Gives you the point where he was on the tone scale. Now, you can actually do that. Somebody starts to tell you something about Dianetics. He says, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. You can take a look at them. You see they obviously have psychosomatic illness. And that they're disposed to argue with you, and they're going to be combative and skeptical about the whole thing. Just tell them, if your head were being pushed, which direction would it be moved? And make them jockey themselves around like that. Until the fire fellow finally says, I've got a headache. You say, well, so you've got a headache. Well, I can turn it off for you. And turn it off for me. In other words, what I'm recommending to you is that you avoid so-called reasoning on the subject and specialize in action, even when you're trying to demonstrate or even when you're trying to teach. Action. Stress it.
You don't realize, because it's happened gradually, the degree you have entered a complex and technical subject and the degree to which you have succeeded in orienting your knowledge of that subject. And you are apt not to realize that it took quite a while and that the people around you maybe aren't going to be able to come up the same level you're on in 5 minutes. But you can certainly demonstrate that you have considerable force and power if you just say, well, now, let's move your head in that direction. And they're very convinced. They say there's something to it. Now, there's something else. In general treatment, we've been talking about treating arthritis. It perhaps escaped some of you, I hope not, that arthritis is at 1.5, not 1.4, 1.6, it's 1.5. It's always at 1.5. The fellow might be a 1.5 who is in a momentary, and I mean that, just a 24, 48-hour apathy about something, but he's a 1.5. His arthritis will go away when he goes down the tone scale below 1.5. And it will go away when he goes up the tone scale above 1.5. We've had considerable discussion about holders, the holding and damping out of pain. Well, that's what happens at 1.5. And it takes 1.5 in order to damp it out and hold a deposit. You realize it's quite a remarkable facsimile that will cause an individual actually to take a deposit of calcium and hold it in suspension in his body. Now, that's quite a holder. That's really a wide aberration, physical, very bad. So let us realize then that if you treat an arthritic, you're treating a 1.5. 1.5s are pretty easy to treat. They're rancorous and cantankerous, and they'll find a lot of fault with you and so forth, the beginnings of the thing. But you know exactly what they're doing. Exactly what they're doing, and you know exactly how to resolve what they're doing. Neuralgia, so-called, would not be as easy as arthritis, because it can be below, above, or all around. It's not necessarily in one spot. It's usually, however, down the tone scale to the point where the individual is surrendering to emotion. You go over the category of psychosomatic illnesses, you'll find out that sinusitis, for instance, does not spot itself, so far as I know, inevitably upon the tongue span. It could be several places, because it's only part of, it's just a sort of a generalized part of a major syndrome. But a scale of illnesses has not been completed. But you will find that in science, that column on behavior and physiology. Well, depository ills come at 1.5. Now, there are other depository ills besides arthritis. Others, many others. There's the fellow suffering from kidney calculi. Lots of them. I'm not quite sure where a duodenal ulcer lies, but I think it's just a little bit down the tone scale, not much. But it's a little down the tone scale, I think, from arthritis. Now, you can estimate how long you're going to have to process an individual by estimating how much effort there is left in him to fight the efforts that's hitting him. Fellow in apathy, of course, is pretty close to zero residual personal effort to kick back against the efforts which have almost overcome him. So he's kind of rough. At 0.5, he has a little more, but not enough to make a smooth case for him. But at 1.5, he's got a lot. He's got a lot of personal effort with which to combat the incursion efforts. And what he's doing, he has taken an incoming force and he is holding it and damping it out. That's what he's doing with it. and he's not very hard to treat. And it's by rote, the treatment of it. The thing will be a service facsimile. It has to do with holding or stopping and not changing. So what kind of locks do we look for all the way across the tone scale? If we want to get the end theta of locks, why, we just shoot out all the times when he has tried to hold on to something. Particularly times when he's tried to hold on to something and failed. Tried to hold on to something and failed. Tried to hold on to something and failed. So on and so on and so on. All up and down the track. That's the end theta lock, and the validation lock is when he succeeded in holding on to something. When he succeeded in holding on to something. He succeeded. When he succeeded in stopping, in other words. And not just holding on to something, but stopping. When has he stopped his car? When was he able to stop somebody from moving? When did he stop somebody from talking? When did he stop somebody from walking? When did he stop a clock from running? There's pleasure in that, by the way. This guy busted something. He stopped it. Broke it so it would not move. Locks of this character is what you look for. And you look for a computation whereby the individual is not permitted to hold on to something. Not permitted to, and that broke him down as a service facsimile. That's one of them. It's where the individual, I beg your pardon, that is incorrect. It's above that level that you get your service facsimile. The service facsimile has demanded a surrender and has caused him to hold on to. And so he's holding on to something despite somebody. Or he's persisting in a course of action despite somebody. As he goes down the tone scale, he will then refuse changes of action despite. You see your pattern? Now, in the service facsimile, he is holding on to something. The service facsimile makes him hold on to something. And he has accepted this facsimile. But the facsimile came about because he was not permitted to hold on to something. This is the essence of simplicity. What kind of locks do you look for? Stop. Simple. What kind of a service facsimile are you looking for? Wasn't permitted to hold on to something, he's fighting somebody. He's holding on to it anyhow, on a sub-level. Only now it's arthritis. All right, you get your computation off into view. You'll find out when he wasn't permitted to hold on to something, so on. You just work it out. It should resolve fairly rapidly. The reason why I have been mentioning arthritis is because it happens with other suppository somatics to be at a point on the tone scale which can almost invariably be worked. So your resolution of the ill doesn't quite cinch. This person will hold on to his engrams to spite you, but you only want one engram. That's the service facsimile. Doing a lot of dodging with you, get worse if you don't process the case the way it ought to be processed. But processing it is the essence of simplicity. Now, when I say holding, it's holding on at the 1-5 band, you realize that there are psychotic manifestations of a person not being able to give up any motion. That's because the person can't tolerate any kind of motion at all. Non-tolerance of motion, because this person is just that much alive against this much motion. This much alive against this much motion. You try to give this person any change, any start, any stop, anything, and it's dangerous. We're really holding on with the motion which is posed in the service facsimile, just sweeping across, just destructively and devastatingly across the individual. It's just going through and by and around, and this individual, and when you would try to address I, you've only got that much to address, and the individual tries to come back against this. He can't let go of anything, he can't do anything. But at 1-5, there's enough of the guy there to belong. That means he's got a lot of force. Your arthritic, by the way, is quite ordinarily a fairly forceful individual.
ordinarily pretty well endowed. It takes a lot of horsepower to hold on to calcium in that sense. So you see the type of person that you're going up against. Now, an auditor has to be very facile in the way he handles a case. He has to estimate how much counter effort is sweeping across this pre-clear, or is being stopped by this pre-clear, or is being shunted back by this pre-clear, and operate accordingly, because that gives you an immediate index of how much pre-clear there is left there for you to work on. So, you have to adjust your methods accordingly. But you can take an arthritic and frankly bang their heads in. You can't upset them very much. The only way that you could really upset an arthritic case is to go lower on the tone scale, go into sympathy. That's going lower on the tone scale than the case. So the case now says, I've got it. So I don't have to do anything. You want to stay higher on the tone scale. Antagonism toward the arthritic does not hurt. That's higher on the tone scale. The guy says, well, I don't feel like working today. Well, that's up to you. Nice day. I'd rather go out playing golf anyhow. And they'll change their attitude right away. Well, you don't seem to be in the mood to run anything or cooperate today. I think I'll go for a drive. That gets me. Now, one thing that's interesting about an arthritic at that level of the tone scale is that just the act of somebody walking off or driving off is an end theta lock, because they didn't hold the person. They didn't stop the person. They understand clearly that this individual has to go to the grocery store. And yet they'll get mad. Somebody goes to the grocery store, and they come back, and then they have a lot of fancy reasons why they had to get mad. None of them valid. The only reason that they had to get mad is that something left them. You see, they're holding on solidly onto an antagonistic motion, so they consider all motions antagonistic, actually. And so they'll try to keep anybody from moving, but the way you keep things from moving is not let them get out from under. Don't let it get out from under. Don't let it move out from under. It's not too bad to have something out there moving in. That's not too bad. But something starting here and going out, oh, no. And once something moves in, then don't let it get out again. You have somebody who is a friend, who is an arthritic, you find out that this individual gets unhappy. You say, good night. Good night, you walk down the steps. Individual holds you in conversation. Of course, that's quite a human trait, because people are interested in people. But this individual will go through all sorts of mechanisms and so forth in order to keep you moving. That's the act. It isn't that your company is so precious or anything else, that you are something that is not to leave. You are a potential moving away motion, and therefore you must not move away. So, here's the package. Here's the package treatment on this one level. Now, you'll find that such people very often they complain. You haven't treated them right. You're wrong. All this sort of thing. You shouldn't think things like that. You mustn't move. You mustn't move. You mustn't move. But engaging such a pre-clear, it is very wise to get the pre-clear's medical record and perhaps even x-rays, which demonstrate the existence of the condition, and then get the x-rays to demonstrate that the condition has disappeared. We have ample precedent for the disappearance of arthritis in processing, even when, as I occasionally suspect, it's disappeared because the person's been moved down the tone scale. But we've certainly cleaned up a lot of arthritis. So you see that you got two outs there. This person is really suffering with arthritis. Move them down the tone scale. Simple, they'll get well. Anything you do to this person to change them, you can succeed in changing them by picking up locks and so forth. You can certainly clean up their difficulties. Now, I would not feel any such security or certainty with science. Although Well, that's fairly easy to resolve in dynamics. I just say that you don't get a pattern package. I mean, it's not the same route to process. Cancer, by the way, there was some discussion last night talking to Don. Some possibility of cancer may lie along that line. The individual in cancer, you know, is probably in conception or mitosis as engrams. The one he's in depends on the kind of cancer he's got. Embryonic cancer is conception. No, mitosis. And malignant cancer is conception, merely because the fluids of the body at that time of generation were such and so and such and so. When they get into re-stimulation, then the embryonic cell can start growing madly, or you start getting mitosis all over the place. Fascinating business. You see, you've noticed the birth wax on people's hands occasionally when they're stuck in birth. I can tell a person who's stuck in birth like that. The amount of wax on his hands. Well, similarly, cancer introduces certain fluids into the system. At the moment of conception, there is a certain generation of nutritional growth balances, catalysts, growth catalysts. And at mitosis, you have another set of them to produce another effect. So that in either one of these cases, you would get a type of cellular malgrowth or misgrowth. The whole body then starts to produce these catalysts, and some germ cell left around starts to go wild. That at least is a theory behind cancer. Cancer is of little moment to us. There aren't anywhere near the cancer patients in the United States as there are some others. I say when it's of little moment to us, this is not a big goal. A lot of good people go by the boards because of cancer. But this is not a major point. All I'm doing is bringing in the fact, not a major answer. All I'm doing is bringing in the fact that cancer may lie along this 1-5 band. And it'd be interesting if you as auditors see whether or not that holds true. I know arthritis does. All right. There's just above this level of arthritis, you get minor damping on motion. And you'll get minor diseases on holding. So you'll get the minor depository diseases being just a little higher on the tone scale than arthritis. Should comment on that. Kidney calculus is not at 1.5. Kidney calculi is about 1.7, 1.8, or even at 2, depending on its severity. So you can feel fairly confident when you tackle a case which is a case. Or the depository ill, that you're tackling something that you can resolve. But I don't think you should feel the same amount of confidence in tackling somebody who's about 0.2 or something like that. Trying to find enough motion left in them to rehabilitate is a rough deal. That's a real rough. And you as an auditor, however, would have the tendency to consider the arthritis case tough because the arthritic is combative. And the low tone scale case easy because they're not combative. They're so flat. So you might have a tendency to give less serious attention to your apathy band, maybe because it doesn't give you trouble. Now, arthritis, you're solving a lead pipe cinch with your present technique. But whoa, what care on the part of an auditor to pick up the little grain of counter effort, or the little grain of effort that is left in this great mass of counter effort, which is your apathy pre-clear. And somehow or other, build it up in order to get back at some of this other effort tickling. Point out that this is the case which requires skill in handling, tremendous skill. Your greatest forbearance as an auditor, of course, is called for at 1-1, where some of these 1-1s, they just start tearing you up. It's just gruesome. They lie on the couch and just start to
smile at you. Then they pretend that they're being very friendly just so they can get around and chew at you again. Wonderful. I have had pre-clears at that level so insulting that I wonder that I just didn't bust the couch over their heads. I had one who used to sit down. Every time he'd sit down, he'd say, "You pompous jackass." And he'd start off from there. Second, I would start talking to him. Second, I would start talking offhand. I would give him just about so long along in this line, let him ride just about so long, and then I wouldn't be saying anything. I would be producing opposite effects. So then he'd come around to propitiation. He'd swing around, and everything was nigh quiet. This fellow was forbidden to have any more processing one time by somebody who was working for me. They got mad at him. They said, "No more processing for you." And all he said, "Look, I'll be good. I won't do this anymore. I won't do these mean things. I won't say these mean things anymore and everything else. But don't do that." Comes back, sits down in the chair, you pompous jackal. This character, by the way, was stuck in a very, very nasty mumps engram at 9. He's a homosexual. Stuck in a mumps engram at 9. If I'd had effort processing at that time, I could have saved myself an awful lot of work. Because he was right there in that mumps engram. Right there. The second that you disturbed him the least bit in that motion, boy, he was bad off. He was not convinced that he could handle a counter effort. Not convinced he could handle it, but he was still thinking he ought to try. And a very tippy situation. But you'll find that your easy ones to do are those that are above 2, of course. But hardly anybody's sick very much above 2 to any great degree. Some of them wear glasses. Well, take somebody's glasses off. By the way, do you know how to take somebody's glasses off? Let me tell you that before I get out of here. Very easy. Your dynamics, anytime you affect one dynamic, you affect them all. Next line. Okay, let's just stop anybody from looking. Get the locks to stop anybody from looking on any dynamic, including self. Get all these locks about stopping people from looking. They exist. A little bit hard to find in most of these cases. Now, get particularly conclusions now that one has to have assistance to look. And I don't mean just glasses, you understand. One has to have assistance to look. And this includes going and getting a flashlight. Anytime one admits that one needs assistance to see something. Now, after you've got this unburdened for a short time, you get these locks more or less off. You want the effort not to communicate. And you clean up communication setups here and there. The effort to communicate, the effort not to communicate, and so on. Specializing on this. And of course, you will run square into the service engram for the glasses. But there's how you get there. And you just process it out by effort, that's all. Now, you will find that a rape may result in glasses. You find some sexual attack, you see, because this is refusal to communicate. But after all, what is a dental operation but a sort of a rape? If you really think about it that way, somebody is trying to take something away from only partially reasoning individual who is under drugs. And what does he want? He wants them to get away. Not communicate. You got the idea? Don't communicate with me. Don't touch me. Don't hurt me. So you start up and down the track, and you'll find here and there incidents, particularly locks is what you want. You don't want to process 1,000 engrams just to get off an old stinky pair of glasses. And you get the times when the individual didn't want to touch, feel, see, hear, or any of the rest of the package of communication, because that's what you're looking for. But you see, also, falling out of love with somebody is a decision to break affinity, which can cause bad eyesight. How? Because you have affected C by a break of A. Break of affinity causes a break of communication. So, you work at any of the ARC package. Conclusion processing on any of the ARC package. And you will start moving in toward more locks on not letting people look, not wanting people to see, and so on. It's wonderful how many teachers wear glasses. It's really wonderful how many teachers wear glasses, because regardless of what they think about it, until they get rid of them, they'll have a slight impulse not to let the pupil see what they're talking about. They won't communicate all they know by a long way. Now, it's an odd thing that the holding on of a secret or the promise not to tell, simply that, the holding on of a secret or the promise not to tell, when picked up, can result in an almost spontaneous remission on glasses. You see why that is. The person has promised not to communicate. And he'll promise, and if he's scared or little or something when he makes this sort of thing, or the secret is very big or very dreadful, all these communication channels get affected to some degree, and it's only that it's more popular to wear glasses in this society than be deaf that causes him suddenly to pick up glasses. If it became popular to be deaf, why, everybody go around with ear trumpets. Their eyes would be all right. Promises not to communicate. Promises not to tell. You'll find them effective even when they're in the form of a game played with sister. A game played with auntie. Now, when mama comes home, we won't tell her what we did, will we? Oh, no, we won't. Now, that's a handy one for you to get up as an auditor anyhow. But there's chains of these doggone things I won't tell, I'll keep it secret, and so on. You take somebody who has been operating very long in intelligence, he really starts to hang glasses on his nose. Take anybody who's been in the armed services, some part of his perception will be affected very definitely if he's handling classified material. You get the idea. This is not supposed to be communicated, so it's not supposed to be communicated in that manner. Now let him get to a moment where he suddenly communicates unlawfully against the decision of the big sister or something of the sort to communicate, where he communicated unlawfully and is made to realize that he has broken his promise. In other words, he's failed his own conclusion on the subject of communication, and you have such a thing as glasses and deafness as a lead pipe certainty right there. You see how that would be? So this is the kind of thing you look for, take people's glasses off. And believe me, you're not going to effort process off a person's glasses unless you pick up at least some of the reasons why he's got to have the service facsimile of those glasses. So you're going to get some of those reasons out. Well, I've held you over time because we started late. I want to thank you very much for your attention this last week. And I hope that some here or there small scrap of information may be of service to you in the future. And thank you for being good audience.